Fitzgerald? She glances up at me. Thanks anyway. Punching the buttons, she hands the phone back to me. Kate isn't registered.
That's good, right?
It could just mean that the paperwork hasn't caught up to the operator yet. Sometimes it takes a few hours. I lean against a railing near the elephants. You seem pretty worried about your sister right now, I point out. Are you sure you're ready to face what's going to happen if you stop being a donor? I know what's going to happen. Anna's voice is low. I never said I liked it. She raises her face to mine, challenging me to find fault with her. For a minute, I look at her. What would I do if I found out that Izzy needed a kidney or part of my liver or marrow? The answer isn't even questionable. I would ask how quickly we could go to the hospital and have it done. But then, it would have been my choice, my decision. Have your parents ever asked you if you want to be a donor for your sister? Anna shrugs. Kind of. The way parents ask questions that they already have answered in their heads. You weren't the reason that the whole second grade stayed in for recess, were you? Or you want some broccoli, right? Did you ever tell your parents that you weren't comfortable with the choice they'd made for you? Anna pushes away from the elephants and begins to trudge up the hill. I might have complained a couple of times, but they're Kate's parents, too. Small tumblers in this puzzle begin to hitch for me. Traditionally, parents make decisions for a child because, presumably, they are looking out for his or her best interests. But if they are blinded instead by the best interests of another one of their children, the system breaks down. And somewhere underneath all the rubble are casualties like Anna. The question is, did she instigate this lawsuit because she truly feels that she can make better choices about her own medical care than her parents can? Or because she wants her parents to hear her for once when she cries? We wind up in front of the polar bears, Trixie and Norton. For the first time since we've gotten here, Anna's face lights up. She watches Kobe, Trixie's cub, the newest addition to the zoo. He swats at his mother as she lies on the rocks, trying to get her to play. The last time there was a polar bear baby, Anna says, they gave it to another zoo. She's right. Memories of the article in the Projo swim into my mind. It was a big public relations move for Rhode Island. Do you think he wonders what he did to get himself sent away? We are trained as guardians ad litem to see the signs of depression. We know how to read body language and flat affect and mood swings. Anna's hands are clenched around the metal railing. Her eyes go dull as old gold. Either this girl loses her sister, I think, or she's going to lose herself. Julia, she asks, would it be okay if we went home? The closer we get to her house, Anna distances herself from me. A pretty nifty trick, given that the physical space between us remains unaltered. She shrinks against the window of my car, staring at the streets that bleed by. What happens next? I'm going to talk to everyone else. Your mom and dad, your brother and sister, your lawyer. Now a dilapidated Jeep is parked in the driveway, and the front door of the house is open. I turn off the ignition, but Anna makes no move to release her seatbelt. Will you walk me in? Why? Because my mother's going to kill me. This Anna, genuinely skittish, bears little resemblance to the one I've spent the past hour with. I wonder how a girl might be both brave enough to instigate a lawsuit and afraid to face her own mother. How come?